Hi folks, this is Lauren Hunt with another episode of the Guitar Podcast. Thanks for tuning in again. This is episode number 47. For those of you new to the Guitar Podcast, I want you to know that when I talk about guitars and amps and pedals and music and all, I'm conveying my opinion from my experience and learning over the years. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Chime in with comments and such on the show notes. Follow the Guitar Podcast on Facebook. Last but not least, go to theguitarpodcast.net and sign up for email alerts where you'll get emails notifying you when a new episode has been released and other timely information regarding the Guitar Podcast. All right, let's get to it. This week we have a special treat. We're talking with Ryan Dunn from Toadworks. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Awesome. So, I don't know if you've seen, I'm sure the people who subscribe to the Guitar Podcast have seen my, or go to the Facebook page have seen my pedal board and see the, that I have two of the Toadworks pedals on my board. And,
excellent.
Yeah, I dig them. Yeah, so if you look on my, pedal board, you'll see that I have the Mr. Squishy compressor that is always on. No matter if I'm playing a single coil pickup guitar or my Les Paul or SG with humbuckers, it doesn't squish the tone. It doesn't kill it. It's really pretty awesome. And I love the death rattle because it's got the, you know, the two different overdrives and the clean boost that you can set it up for before the distortion pedal or after. And it's just really cool. But I know that that one's been discontinued and you have a new pedal that's replaced that. Right?
That is correct. We discontinued Death Rattle, has to be about a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
Beginning of 2010, we released Fat City. We debuted that at the 2010 NAMM show, Winter. And yeah, it's a similar concept, different circuit, but we changed a couple, from an operational standpoint, we changed a couple of key things. One is... with the old death rattle, you could essentially had three switches and you turn the unit on, and then you could select, you know, toggle between one of two overdrives, and then you had the independent boost. And with the Fat City, each overdrive has its own switch, so you can actually have them both on the same time and cascade them together.
Very cool.
Which is the bomb, by the way.
Yeah.
That's like the Fat City sound.
Very cool. Yeah, because and I've done that. You know, if you get really, really good overdrive pedals, you can cascade them together like that, and that's a really cool feature.
You have a giant list of questions.
Yeah, it's like 3 hours. That won't interfere with your evening plans, will it? I'm just kidding.
I have 106 questions.
All right, so Ryan, why did you start building pedals?
Can you clarify that? Are you asking why I started making pedals or why I started making and selling pedals? Two different questions, really.
Could you answer both? Because that's fine.
Sure, absolutely, yeah. Obviously, I always had, you know, some interest in electronics. My background is in IT. I ran IT departments in the Bay Area for a couple different companies. And... I just, obviously technically inclined and had an interest in electronics. I was really into old radios. And I built my first amp back around, 97, 98. My local guitar shop and repair shop was Torres Engineering in San Mateo. So I used to go up all the time and talk with Dan Torres. And he showed me a lot of cool little tricks when I was building the amp. And he actually really, really encouraged me. A lot initially when I started doing Toadworks. The reason I started building one just literally had a free weekend and, you know, copied a circuit and, you know, made some noise and connected a switch to it and, you know, pissed off the neighbors and just had some fun with it. I think stuck it back in the drawer. And that's why, you know, that's why I made my first pedal. This is just, you know, purely experimentation. Wasn't even a hobby at that point. It's just, I had some parts laying around and threw them together and boom, pedal.
Was that a distortion pedal or overdrive pedal?
It was was actually it's funny to say, but it was actually a fuzz pedal called the Toad pedal.
That's where the name came from.
Actually, in the city in San Francisco, we went to a like, I don't even know the store's there anymore. We went to this funky old store that had a lot of old used gear, and they had, I mean, I didn't even listen to it. I just bought it because it said Toad. You know, it was a green pedal with a single knob, and it was a fuzz made by some outfit down in L.A., I think. You can find information about it online. It's called Toad Fuzz, and it had the switch was labeled Lick, and it was a goofy little piece of gear. And since what I did was, that was kind of the first little thing I copied, and I didn't even have enough knowledge at that point to really even draw a schematic out based on that device. So I literally just drew out the physical architecture of it and built a copy based on that, but I didn't have the right transistors. I didn't even have all the right values of resistors. So what I made was a real Frankenstein. It barely made noise, but it was still cool. I mean,
yeah,
it's still fun.
Yeah, I can only imagine. So it didn't quite sound, didn't meet your expectations?
Not exactly, no. It was just, it made noise, and frankly, I was very happy about that.
Oh, that's cool.
So that was enough for me.
Yeah.
It just went back in the drawer.
So you made the pedal and called it the Toad, right?
No, I didn't.
Oh.
I didn't call it anything. It was just in a box, and, you know, I don't even know what the hell happened to it. That pedal didn't survive, really.
Okay.
And this was kind of pre my amp building experience, so.
Oh, wow.
Anyways,
that's like a whole nother conversation then.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was literally just, it was sort of like, you know, showing me a piece of, my girlfriend happens to be a knitter. So it's like her showing me a piece of, you know, knitting a little square, you know, knit square, and me just kind of, you know, reverse engineering it and making something identical, you know, by looping things through and wrapping around and without actually knowing how to knit or even understanding the principles behind it, literally just copying the structure. That's what it was like. And this was probably, oh gosh, I'd be early in that, maybe, gosh, 97. It was something like that. I was still working at Netscape at the time. Anyway, then I decided to build an amp. I found an old Brown Princeton that somebody had really butchered. It was like a 61 or 62 Princeton.
Oh, that's too bad.
The guy, it actually had a larger cabinet, so they put a 12 in it. But the chassis was in pretty good shape. Most of the electronics were okay. The transformers were just fine. So, and I found that I got it for a song at some little, it wasn't even a flea market, it was just some little, I think it might have been garage sale. Mm-hmm. Anyway, decided I wanted to rebuild it. So the first thing I did was, realizing it was high voltage and realizing it could kill you.
Yeah.
You know, you did something wrong. And last thing I wanted to do was die. So
sure.
I actually went and got an electronics textbook, a regular, probably, first year, EE, and sat down and started reading from the very beginning. Did the tests, kind of taught myself from scratch and using the textbook. And got far enough into it where I felt I wasn't going to kill myself, and I had a halfway decent understanding about what was going on, inside it with all the components, et cetera. And that's when I went up to Dan and I said, here's a schematic, give me everything I need to rebuild this sucker. And so he just kind of put it all in a bag and gave it to me, and I took it home and, spent a week sweating over it. Anyway, so that was sort of my crash course in basic electronics theory. And then after that, I went back and thought, well, hey, wouldn't it be fun to build another pedal? And this time, kind of knowing what I'm doing. So that's when a buddy of mine got together and we just, you know, started tweaking it and working on it. And we came up with something, I mean, you know, just pure experimentation. It wasn't even, well, you know, if I change this resistor, this is what's going to happen to the circuit. It was like, if I change this resistor, what's it going to sound like? You know? And so we just tweaked and tweaked and tweaked till we came up with something that sounded pretty cool and kind of unique. And that was the Mr. Ed pedal.
That was our
first pedal effort. And we only made four of them. I made four of them and, you know, painted them and called it Mr. Ed because I thought it was kind of funny. And and put works on there because, you know, I thought that was kind of funny. And then I had no intention of selling or starting a business or anything. I just made four and handed them out to a couple friends. And I had one. And so anyway, long story short is I did that. People played with them. It was fun. We took them in the studio, did a recording. It was a lot of fun. But it was still just, you know, for fun. And I happened to be working for a French company called Boostworks, and which was great because, you know, spent half my time in Paris and had the other half time in San Francisco. But the company started having some problems, and they started laying people off. And I got the axe along with almost the entire rest of the company. And they went out of business like a year later. But I got, you know, I got my pink slip and I scratched my head and said, well, I'm not going to just sit around collecting unemployment. This is like right when the bubble burst around, you know, 2000, midway through 2000, you know, and everybody was out of work and everybody's collecting unemployment, at least up in the Bay Area. So at that point, what can I do? You know, what other skills do I have? Working on, I'll make a pedal and throw it online. Make another one of those Mr. Ed pedals and threw it up online. And I had like 100 orders in 2 days. And I just went, oh, shit, you know, what do I do now? Because, you know, because I was buying things one at a time just to make a few for my friends. Uh-huh. And I started doing the math and went, oh, geez, you know, I mean, I think I put it online for $70, I think was the going price.
Mm-hmm.
And buying things, you know, more or less one at a time, it quickly became apparent that I just didn't have the cash to outlay, you know, to buy all the parts I was going to need to fill those 100 orders. And I very briefly considered just sending everybody their money back. Because, you know, when they placed their order, I mean, it was like a, you know, buy one. I put, you know, a little one-page website and you can buy it now, and all this money started flooding in.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, and I kind of did math real quick. I'm about to lose money on this. So, anyway, that's. I kind of had a little moment there where I said, "Well, I'm either gonna give everybody the money back and, you know, shine this, or I am gonna make a little go of this and see if I can't make a few bucks and keep myself busy until, you know, until the IT world gets back on its feet."
Right.
So I decided to go ahead and go for it. And that's the, kind of the weird thing is, and I'm the first person to admit this, if I had actually, when I first made the first four Mr. Eds, they gave to my friends, if I had actually intended to start a business, I probably wouldn't have named it Toadworks.
So why did you name it Toadworks?
Because my wife at the time called me Toad.
Okay.
And my girlfriend still does. Some people do. So.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was the only reason. It was because I made them just for fun.
Uh-huh.
And if I had thought I was going to try to really truly market them, I might have gone with something else. But there it is. Now we're stuck with it. So.
Yeah.
And it went just okay because it's kind of unique, except that when you're talking to somebody on the phone, it can sound suspiciously like Toneworks.
So uh-huh. Sure.
Once or twice, we've gotten halfway through your conversation before somebody would be like, wait, where are you from? So, anyway. Got it. 100 orders came in, and I made the decision, okay, yes, I'm going to really actually try to manufacture these, and I had to start doing a lot of research and quickly found out that there's a basic problem with small scale manufacturing. Like, if you, it's easy to make one of anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to make, and it's just as easy to make 10,000 of anything, because then you just go to a facility that's already set up to do that sort of thing, and you give them some money, and they just do it, and they figure it out. So that's even easier. Yeah. It's hard to make 100 of anything, because you have all the problems of a larger scale operation without any of the resources.
Right.
You know, you're not getting the volume discounts on components, et cetera. You know, you're not really set up for an assembly line, a proper one. So that's when I called a buddy of mine, Dan San Diego. He actually had worked on the original Mr. Ed with me, sitting in my garage tweaking stuff, named Doug Harrison. And I said, do you want to be my partner? And he laughed at me, but he ended up saying yeah.
Yeah.
So we he put up some money to buy some stuff, and, you know, so we didn't have to sit there and hand paint them and powder coat them, and we actually went to powder coating, and then hired a couple guys, IT guys I knew who were out of work,
yeah,
to come in and help solder, and started making them in my garage on Mountain View, California.
Nice. The demos you've done in the past on your website were, I know I've seen on YouTube where other people are demoing your pedals, but the original ones from, say, I don't know, 5 years ago, and maybe the ones that are up there now for, like, the individual pedals, is that you playing the guitar on those demos?
Are you talking about the audio clips or the,
yes,
video clips?
The audio clips.
The audio clips, that's either me or Doug.
Okay. They represent the pedals really, really well.
You know what? I thank you for saying that, but I gotta be perfectly... Well, okay. The current ones, yeah, I would actually agree with you. And
okay.
But some of the older ones, we had the hardest time getting a good representation of what the pedals actually sound like, you know, in person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'd record them and just had the hardest time. We'd listen back and just go, you know, what are we doing wrong? You know, what? Anyway, yeah, that kind of turned around when I met a guy named Steve Trunnell at AEA, and he loaned us a very nice microphone, the best microphone I've ever used, with the TRP preamp, and happy to pimp his stuff because he loaned it to us to use, but it's, mm-hmm, also fantastic, and that really transformed both our audio and video demos, because the video demos, now what we do, if you watch our video demos on YouTube, you'll hear us talking, you'll hear the echo in the room from the video camera microphone, but then when we play, it's the pure AEA mic, and the quality's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's, that really transformed it. That's only been of the last couple of years that we've had access to that mic.
What would you say your favorite pedal growing up was before you started making your own?
You know what, that's the funny thing, is I didn't use a lot of pedals. I was never really a pedal guy. The only one that I ever had back in the 80s that I used with any kind of frequency, was an old Ibanez, chorus. It was an old, I think it was a CS9 stereo chorus, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Loved the sound of it. Never really used any of the pedals. That's, I think I, you know, a couple DODs. Oh, I take it back. There was one other one I really, really, really liked. And for the longest time, I kind of wanted to start looking at the circuit and see what I liked about it and how to make something similar, but never did it, though. But the, it's going to sound weird, but there was an old 80s DOD stereo bass chorus, and it sounds fantastic for guitar. It's like FX-72B or something like that, I think, for this model. But just absolutely kick-ass. Really loved that. Used that quite a bit.
Wow.
That was like more like in the, you know, early 90s, but other than that, I gotta be honest, I just never really used pedals.
You know, that's funny you say that, because up until just about, I don't know, 2003 or so, I really didn't use a whole lot of pedals either. And when I was playing out in the bars and everything, I would plug in pretty much into a volume pedal and maybe a wah if I needed, and go right into my Marshall, because it was the truest tone. It was really, really pure. And it was one of those pride things that if I couldn't do it without the help of pedals, I shouldn't be doing it, that sort of thing. It was kind of one of those idiotic things that had that inner war going on between me and my, you know, guitar playing. But yeah, now
I don't think that's idiotic. I mean, you know, I'm not going to tell anyone that the way they feel about their gear is wrong, because I don't think it is. Right. You know, if that makes you feel good, then who gives a shit?
Yeah,
well, that's my opinion. Yeah. But I was kind of I wasn't quite the same way. I mean, I just plugged straight into my Marshall all of the 90s. I just didn't use any pedals because I didn't. You know, they didn't sound as good as the amp.
Right.
So.
Well,
you know.
And there was that too, that I loved the sound of my my JCM 900. Which Marshall did you use?
I had a JCM 900. It was a 50 watt head. And looking back, I think there were better Marshalls personally. But you know, that's what I had, and it sounded pretty good. So I was happy with it.
Was it the dual reverb or the high gain?
I really don't remember.
Don't remember? Yeah, okay.
There were 900 on the front.
Okay.
There was a head I bought for me, and I plugged into a 4x12 cabinet and made a lot of noise.
Yeah. I'm kind of a Marshall freak, so I'm always asking about that, especially about the 900s. But it's like right now I have an 800, and kind of wish I still had that old one.
Doug's got an old... Hey, Doug, what is that 800, that small one you got? 3203. Yeah, 3203 that we actually traded for here in town. Guy wanted some pedals, and he like, that's the amp that Doug had back in the 80s, and he had been talking about it and talking about it and talking about it. I was tired of hearing it, so I just went and got it for him.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I love Marshalls.
Yeah, he does too. You see, he has like 6 of them now.
That's good. Insane. That's very good. Impressive. You've answered a lot of my questions just in your overview there.
Yeah, I'm not into the whole brevity thing.
Right. You you worked on that 61 Princeton. Do you have any thoughts of maybe Toadworks amps?
You know, we talked about that. This is probably back about 2005. And I don't know, Doug was hotter to do it than I was. But, you know, still willing to experiment for sure. So, you know, we bought a lot of components and started working on designing an amp. And what we originally came up with sounded okay. What we eventually produced, you know, just being perfectly honest, didn't sound very good.
Yeah.
You know, these ideas about, well, you know, let's design a PCB, and well, designing a PCB for a pedal is different than designing a PCB for an amplifier.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know enough about it. It was ill-conceived. And we ended up selling one to a buddy of mine who promptly said, man, I gotta sell this thing because it doesn't sound very good, and I paid good money for it. And I went, well, let me give you money back, you know, because I don't want somebody else getting something that you weren't happy with. So, and we got it back, and I went, yeah, the guy was right. He was absolutely correct. So, you know, you live, you learn. And the funny thing is, while we were experimenting, I was, you know, talking to some of our dealers, going, hey, well, what do you think about us getting amps? And they all said, don't do it. And, you know, they said, we can't sell the high-end amps we have.
Wow.
You know, the last thing this market needs is another boutique company making an amp. I should have listened to that and then just stopped right there. But, you know, I'm glad I had the experience of doing it and making the mistakes. And so we got it back in-house and tore it apart and said, yeah, this really doesn't sound very good. And what I ended up doing was tearing the PCB out of it and rebuilding it. And, you know, they looked like... kind of like deluxe reverbs, same chassis, same cabinet and everything.
Okay.
We just had them done in green Tolex, and I had some special face plates made, tore it apart, and I said, you know, well, I, you know, we still had parts laying around for like 6 or 7 amplifiers, and they were deluxe reverb style, the chassis, the cabinets, single 12. And I thought, well, you know, I got to do something with these, because they were, we were literally holding doors open with them. So I just tore that one apart and rebuilt it. And I think I started with the with the power section of a Brown Concert, and the preamp section was a I think I just used a an old 59 Bassman preamp circuit, and you know, married them together and did some tweaking and messed with some stuff, and Dan came up with something that sounded really good. And by that time, we already decided we're not going to be in the amp business. So, you know, just made a few of those. And, you know, we still got a couple kicking around here. I gave one to some friends down in San Diego, one of the girls who puts on the San Diego Indie Fest. So, and she does a lot of recordings. So, you know, we got a couple laying around here in the shop, and if we use them, they sound kick ass. I mean, guys come over and they go, "Wow, is that for sale?" And it's like, no, I don't want to deal with it.
No, I understand. So,
you know, but hey, as a result of that, I got, you know, I got enough experience now. Like, you know, I actually can do amp repair for guys, and I have a number of friends that bring their amps over when they're broken and they get worked on.
No, that's very cool. So the shops were saying, we don't need more boutique amp producers, but there are a lot of boutique pedal producers out there. I mean, I thought I may have known them all, and now it seems like they're coming in from in Europe and all over the place. I'm seeing these things I've never heard of before, and I'm going, wow. There are a lot of them out there. I mean, have you gotten any pushback or anybody in the store saying, you know, we wish people would stop doing that, or any pushback on that?
No, because I mean it's hard to, it's sort of like pedals are sort of like candy, you know. It's they're impulse buys largely. That's what I think.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you need a fuzz pedal, you know, today I need to go buy a fuzz pedal. You know, you go down to your local shop and you see what they have, and you know, it's like going to the store and buying bread. Well, if they don't have your favorite kind of bread and you need bread, you're still buying a loaf of bread.
Right.
You know, so I think, so if you specifically need something, you go down there, yeah, you buy it, but largely it's impulse. You hear about something, oh, that sounds really cool, and you go off to Amazon or whatever, your favorite website, and you buy it. So I don't, it's not, and they're not high ticket items generally.
I mean,
they're most of them anyway. Except your $800 clones or whatever it is they're going for now.
Oh man!
But most of them are pretty reasonable. You know, between $100 and $300, and people are going to afford to buy a bunch of them for the most part. But with high end amps, I mean, people usually only have, you know, a couple, if that many.
Right.
You know? So I don't, it's hard to saturate a market like that. It's saturating the candy market. You know, that there's a lot of, if everyone's a different flavor, it's, you know, there's going to be something out there for everybody. You know, they're cheap enough that everybody, you know, can afford to buy one if they want to. So I don't really see, I've never heard any pushback about that, but, you know, I guess some people may feel that way. One thing, though, is, since you used the term boutique, I think it may be due for kind of a redefinition. Like when I think of a boutique manufacturer, I think of a boutique manufacturer, not, you know, a guy who makes something in his garage like we started out doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I mean, I see some stuff, they don't even bother labeling. And that's kind of what I would consider sort of sub-boutique. I mean, they're, you know, a cross between a, you know, a boutique pedal and folk art, you know, and it's not that they aren't legitimate devices and can be very musical, but the, it's sort of like the drive to really manufacture and make a success of something doesn't seem to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I first started Toadworks, and you know, I thought, you know, people are going to see it before they hear it. So it's got to look kind of cool. You know, I'm going to put some thought and effort into that. Okay, well, paint isn't that durable, but I want it to be durable. So, you know, let's go ahead and get them powder coated instead of painted. But, you know, a lot of the little stuff popping up, I mean, again, nothing against anybody, but, God, I don't even phrase this. It's almost like they didn't care for the presentation, I guess. And maybe I'm the only person that cares about that, you know? And that's fine. But it doesn't come across as somebody who's actually manufacturing something to me. And maybe I'm drawing an imaginary line. Does any of that make any sense?
No, I think you make a really good point there that, you know, because I have seen some of those pedals floating around that definitely look like somebody just did it in their garage, and it's like, well, how far are these really, you know, how big is their production, and how many people are actually picking these up and then going, you know, because, and I think presentation goes a long way in marketing your pedal before anybody ever plugs a guitar into it. You know, I mean,
that's the when we were selling our I don't know if you remember we had a pedal called True Bypass,
mm-hmm.
and that's before we branched off to we actually have a True Bypass brand line of pedals that are specific, you know, they're switchers, loopers. Well, we had one that was just kind of an AB looper, single loop, called True Bypass, and we came up with that about 4 or 5 years ago. And the reason we did it, you know, because I brought it up to Doug, and his kind of first reaction is, well, who the hell is going to buy that? It's just so simple. You can make one. I said, well, you know, lots of guys can't make them.
Right.
You know, that they don't care. They just want to buy one. That's why you've got, there's a couple, you know, good little companies. There was one called Looper.
Mm-hmm.
This guy named Boggs, I think, who was making them. Anyway, but you couldn't walk into stores and buy those.
No.
Because they looked like a high school metal shop project.
Yeah. Brushed aluminum.
I mean, again, mm-hmm. And by all means, leave us in. These guys call and tear me new, and I don't care. But you know what I mean? They looked industrial rather than like consumer products. And if that's, you know, the look people are going for, that's totally okay. I'm not slamming that. I'm mm-hmm. just saying, you know, stores, I think, want to see something a little more polished. And actually, over the years, I think they've backed off on that a little bit. Because now there's so much boutique, you know, pedals out there that are, you know, they don't put as much emphasis on presentation, I guess is the way I'd put it, and people are kind of getting used to that, and that's okay. I mean, who was it? Well, that Cornish guy kind of started that. It's like, you know, those look terrible, but hey, you know, from an aesthetic standpoint, as I understand it, they're wonderful pedals, and everybody loves them, and, you know, everybody and his brother and their famous cousin use them, that's fine, but they look terrible. You know, I'd be embarrassed if I produced something that looked that bad. But, hey, that's me.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, you also don't walk into, you know, stores and see that. Or at least you didn't. When we started doing the stuff that, you know, our primitive attempts at, you know, making them look nice were really good. I mean, we produced some stuff that really, you know, I'm frankly embarrassed, you know, that it didn't look as good as it should have, but it was, you know, lack of resources and a lack of, you know, of even just manufacturing knowledge and technical knowledge, and design sense. It's a lot of things. Ask me about all the mistakes I've made, because I've made literally every one you can make.
That's funny. Well, you know, if you're not making mistakes, you're not trying, right?
That's one way of putting it.
Oh, that's funny. Hey, I asked you what your favorite pedal, like growing up, was, but what's your favorite Toadworks pedal?
Vermilion.
Oh yeah, wow! I was almost expecting the Fat City, but or Little
Leo.
Well,
and if you asked me, you know, 6 months ago, I would have said Fat City. That's what I've been saying for the past.
Yeah.
And then now it's Vermilion. It is. Okay, I'm sorry. We just had to have a quick powwow about what we wanted to say about Vermilion, because it hasn't even been released yet.
Okay.
So you get the scoop, I guess.
Yeah.
So yes, like I said, that I would have said Fat City 6 months ago, but Fat City is pretty much the only pedal I'd used in the last year, you know, between beginning 2010 and 2011. And, you know, my, yeah, I love both overdrives, but the magic is when you cascade them. It's really magical. And it's hard to, I mean, you can, you, there's a video demo, there's actually a couple of them from 2010 NAMM.
Mm-hmm.
We did one for Premier Guitar, mm-hmm. and there was one with just Tom Quayle playing. And when you get those overdrives cascaded and get them set right, it's just awesome.
Yeah.
And that was my favorite sound. That's why I was using it so much. And buddy of mine named Jeff Gray, he was at the show, and he's listening to me. And I kicked him out, and I go, listen to that, man. And he goes, he looks at me and goes, you want to make a pedal that just sounds like that.
Oh.
And I went, I know, but you know, blah, 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 design time, and, you know, prototyping costs, and blah, blah, blah. And he goes, well, what did it really cost? You know, so I kind of did some quick math in my head, and I said, you know, I said, man, if you want to pay for the costs of the prototyping and all that stuff, and, you know, I'll spend the time to basically convert the design, because you know, there's six knobs on the thing that you have to set a particular way to get that sound. So then it's a matter of, you know, dialing everything in perfectly, you know, taking some measurements, and then, you know, redesigning the circuit onto a smaller board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's other potential problems, you know, noise problems, et cetera. I said, if you want to pay the cost to the prototyping, you know, I'll make you one, you know, with the understanding that if it's totally awesome, which I expect it to be, you know, we'll probably go into production with it. So he said, done. So I worked on it for a little bit, and a couple months ago, got the prototypes in, you know, testing them out, and just, it was so awesome. And I just, me and Doug just looked at, okay, we just need a name now. We've got to release this. So, yeah, there it is. He got one of the prototypes. Actually, we had a couple prototypes, and the other one is going to be a spring shred contest hosted by Tom Quayle. He's doing the judging, and he's got about 15 days to make a decision. And I don't envy him. He's a lot of good players, but mm-hmm. the winner does get the Vermilion prototype, the other one.
Cool. So when... So,
anyway...
When you mentioned Vermilion, I was like, what is, you know, because I don't recall that particular pedal. And because, I mean, sure, yeah. Like the overdrive pedals, yeah, it hasn't come out, right?
It's completely brand new. It is on our website. We just got it up.
Okay.
So it's just going to be this, it's hard to describe the sound, man. It's got a fair amount of gain. I mean, when we were designing the box, I said, this needs to be something different. We need to be, you know, obviously use the same enclosures, but we got to step it up just from a design perspective. I want this one to stand out, kind of stand alone. It's that badass. And, I mean, I even want to call it an overdrive. It's not a distortion, so we ended up calling it a superdrive.
Mm-hmm.
And, because that's really what it is. It's just absolutely, you know, balls-to-the-wall badass. It's got a fair amount of gain, but it's oddly defined, you know. It's really just, man, you got to hear it. And in fact, there's we only have a couple, you know, just quickie demos we knocked out. I mean, they don't really show it off. I gotta figure out. Actually, there is one of the guys who, and again, in case anybody listening to this who actually participated in our spring shred contest, I'm not doing the judging. but there is one kid who put an entry in, and I'm going to be calling him as soon as the contest is over, and I think he's one of the guys I want to have do some, I mean, he's just, you know, I think he's 17 or something like that, but mm-hmm. he is absolutely badass, just tears it up, fantastic feel, yeah, he's going to be huge, I can already tell he's going to be huge.
That's sweet.
I'll be giving him a call to see if we can get him to do some demos, and hopefully whoever wins the prototype will do a few demos for us too. I'm hoping.
Very cool. So, are you taking pre-orders on the Vermilion?
No, you know, we stopped doing that a long time ago. We stopped doing that with Barracuda when we released our Barracuda Flanger, because that was about 2 years late, you know, releasing it. And I just got tired of having to put people off, and I finally just decided from now on we design something or we get ready to ship it. You know, it's ready when it's ready. This is what's in the pipeline. Because people ask, you know, like, hey, what's in the pipeline? You know, well, okay, here's what's in the pipeline. When's it be ready? Yep, maybe the summer, you know, maybe winter. But I'm not going to give a date because I don't want to be held to it.
That's funny.
It's become, we used to sweat about getting things out on time. And I'd much rather spend my time worrying about, you know, is it right? Is it ready?
Right.
Is it perfect?
Sure.
You know.
That sounds really good. Well, now
that we actually have to ship one out because we put it in the ordering system, and somebody ordered one, and I, you know, just said, well, you know, it's not ready yet. When it's ready, we'll ship them. Well, we just got the boards in literally yesterday, so we're going to start shipping them, you know, probably next week. But there's only one order for them because nobody knows it's been released yet.
So now I'm just going to keep on checking with your checking on your website and on your Facebook page and such to be sure to find out whenever the Vermilion is actually in production and we can order them and such.
Well, like I said, it we don't sell direct, but you can call any of our dealers at this point and ask for them. Mm-hmm. And even if they don't know what you're talking about, just say yes, it's on their website, and they will call us and they will say send us one. So, you know, we're going to order them anytime. Like I said, we'll probably start shipping by Monday.
Oh, okay. Well, hey, Ryan, you mentioned the guy who loaned you the mic for your demos that vastly improved your audio quality for your demos. Do you have a link you'd like to share with to his website? I can post that in the show notes.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't even tell you why I don't understand why this is the URL, but the URL is www.wesdooley.com. It's WESDOOLEY.com. But I don't know what that has to do with the audio stuff, but that is the website for AEA, which stands for Audio Engineering Associates.
Cool.
But they make... basically, what we have is just, I think it's literally called the ribbon mic, and it has a TRP preamp. I think TRP stands for the ribbon preamp. I'm not sure, but
that's funny.
Yeah, I hadn't, you know, I don't remember if I'd heard of them, but I started talking with Steve years ago at NAMMS quite a while back when we first started talking. And after we started talking, I started doing a little research, and, you know, Pete Townsend, you know, like, is swearing by their stuff, and there's some pretty heavy cats who were using their stuff. So when he offered to let us borrow one, I said, oh, yeah, absolutely, absolutely, you know. But at the time, if he hears this, he's probably going to laugh at me, but at the time, I don't know how much importance I placed in the microphone, because I'd only used kind of poor mics. You know, so, you know, I've been recording with 57s and 58s, and, well, you know, which are fine for, you know, live stuff, but
sure.
we weren't getting great sounds, and I was scratching my head, going, well, gee, you know, what's the big deal? It's just a microphone. And it wasn't until we got our hands on this thing and, you know, did some nice close miking. I've got a reissue Vibroverb. And it's got the big 15 in it, super clean sounding. Did some nice close miking with that. And, man, it was magic. It was like the amp was sitting in front of me, listening to the speakers. It was absolutely amazing. It was like the best, one of the best clean sounds I've ever heard, like ever recorded. It was fantastic. So I immediately called and said, can we keep this a little bit longer? So, please? So, yeah, we worked out a very good deal, and that's all we record with. I mean, all of our video demos, we have somebody overseas we want to do some recordings for us, and we're literally shipping a mic over. I mean, that's what needs to go through.
That's cool. Hey,
commercial rate A, but they do rule.
Yeah. Well, it sounds to me like he did a favor for you, and in turn, you've come on my show to taking your time out of your day, and I'd like to kind of return the favor. Definitely, I'm going to post a link to the Toadworks USA site, and I'd like to help out your friend too that's making these awesome ribbon mics. All right, well, cool, Ryan. Hey, thanks a lot. I mean, this is. It's gone a lot longer than I thought it would, and I'm glad that you've taken the time out of your day to indulge me on my guitar podcast, and you shared a lot of really cool information as far as where you started and why you did what you did, and basically somewhat of the future of Toadworks. Is there any kind of closing thoughts you'd like to have?
No.
Okay.
You know, honestly, I can't think of any. I just weird. You know, we've sort of stopped reacting to what we think people are going to want or what the current fad is, and we've just, you know, started saying, you know, to hell with it. Let's just make stuff we love, and hopefully somebody else loves it too. You know, that's kind of become our philosophy.
You know, I think that's a great approach, because you start. You know, bending with the wind, and you know, who are you? You know, you'll be, you know, 5-10 years down the line going, who are we really now? We're making something that, you know, 10 other people, you know, 10 other companies are making, and you know, I like that. And I think you're a very original company, and you know, the tones I get from the Death Rattle are definitely unique, and whenever I talk to people about that I have a compressor on when I'm using humbuckers, they're like, really, you would never use a compressor with humbuckers, but it doesn't kill the sound. It doesn't take the tone away. It almost excites it and makes it better. Thanks again, Ryan. I was a bit excited all day leading up to this interview with you. It was really pretty cool, and I'm so thankful that you were able to take time out of your day for this, and man, this is really cool, and I certainly hope that the audience has it really, really enjoys it too. If anybody can, people ask you questions on your website? Is like a contact us, contact Ryan, ask Ryan questions?
Yeah, we've got a regular email form on our website. They can ask us whatever they want. We're also on Facebook. Just hop on Facebook and look for Toadworks USA. Talk to us there.
Sweet. And I've friended Toadworks USA on the Guitar Podcast as well. So, you know, I'll post a link to that, all that as well. So, well, thanks again, man. I hope you have a great rest of your week. And thanks again.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Have a great day. And that pretty much wraps it up for today's episode of the Guitar Podcast. Please email me with questions at info@theguitarpodcast.net. Comment on the show notes. If you like what you heard today and you subscribe using iTunes or Zune, please let them know by writing a review. And again, big thanks to Ryan Dunn from Toadworks coming on the show. Nice long interview. And that's... it's really something to be able to take that time out of your day to help to you know, answer questions, kind of tell the background of Toadworks and so on. Thanks a lot, and thanks for tuning in again. This is Lauren Hunt signing off for the Guitar Podcast.